Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll get going in just a few here. We'll let a few people on in. Hello, Katie Klaus.
Hey, yeah, that's weird. I had a Teams link.
I know. It shows up. It's like Teams is trying to take over Zoom, I think. There's your conspiracy.
I send a Teams invite for a save the date because I can't send the Zoom, like, the links out in advance. So that's kind of our workaround. So sorry for the confusion.
That's okay. I must not have gotten the other one or else I missed that I had an updated one. So my fault.
Yeah. Well, we will get going. Let's give it like 30 seconds or so more, and then we will get going today. But I do want to show y'all where I'm coming from, because after flying in here and the anxiety, I guess I would say, flying in here in the middle of a hurricane, today is the most beautiful day. So I'm going to stand up a minute so it will refocus on the background and show y'all where I'm at.
Ooh, pretty.
So Western Secondary, Dana Point, California is where I'm coming to you from today. And we just found out this morning, for those of you that had joined us in Terania, this conference is going to be in Terania next year. So like super excited about that. So, but we'll get going here today. Katie, I didn't want to miss out talking to you. I'm excited to broadcast this not from the office, because today I have with me someone that I absolutely, she provides humor in even the worst situations and is like smart and funny. And I just always love talking with you, Katie Klaus, SVP of Operations from People's Mortgage Company.
Hello. Thanks. I wish I was with you outside. Are you outside too?
I am.
Yeah, that's much nicer than being in the office.
I looked for an hour to find the right spot to do this from. So, but it was well worth it. Well worth it. So I thought, I'm here at MBA Secondary. This morning's opening session was a capital markets session, and they were talking. I thought we would start with like maybe the not nicest news first, and would love your feedback. And anybody who is joining us today would love it if you would just chime in on the chat and how you're feeling about these topics too. We do want it to be interactive. And if you have any questions, pop those in there too. Mortgage rates hit a 20-year high. And almost hate to say it, but so yesterday I heard 8%. And then this morning I heard 8.5%. And it's just like, we haven't seen those for a while. Not sure, you know, where business is at already. I'm not quite sure what that does to where business is at. I don't know if it makes a difference if you're at 7 or 8. So I'd just kind of love, Katie, from like the street level that you deal with every day, like, what are you hearing out there?
Yeah, I mean, 8%, and anything that happens like before I was working and when I was like a child, I don't want to hear about. Keep that stuff in the past. I'm not interested in those types of rates or situations. But things picked up in the summer. They were doing pretty well. Now that rates are kind of going back up, we're seeing a little bit of a slowdown with volumes again. And, you know, people are very concerned. I think the silver lining of all of this up and up and up is people are slowly forgetting how low the rates were. And so I do think when you see them fall, hopefully, you know, within the next year, maybe by the end of the year, back down into the, you know, low sixes, fives, that nature, people will really, that will drive a lot of, refis for those that we've closed, but also, you know, people will maybe hop back in thinking fives and sixes aren't that bad. Whereas for the last year, we've had people when they went up to high fours, low fives, you know, that was like traumatizing to people. And now we're kind of getting back to kind of where it should be, where the higher rates are, at least, you know, when they fall, we will have people get into the market because they won't seem so high like they did a year and a half, 2 years ago. So
yeah, exactly. They're on their way to the pool, by the way, if you happen to see the towels going by. Sorry about that. Chairperson Powell speaking at the end of the week. I think that people will have a time frame that they'll be able to adjust their mindset to a different rate, because but everything that I've read, if you've read something different, please share. But everything that I've read is the intent is to keep interest rates high for, I think, more of an extended period of time than what people initially thought, to make sure that inflation doesn't flare up again. So again, being here has been kind of beneficial. I heard a year. I also heard 18 months. Of course, everybody's guessing. Nobody really knows what that looks like, but it does look like it's probably going to be a little bit longer than what people thought it was. One of the other things that was in the news this last week was they called it a looming threat. I always love the headlines. People know that, but I like the headlines and then reading what it's really about. But on September 30th, the National Flood Insurance Program expires. Just thought it was, I mean, I didn't realize, but there was a shift made a while ago that it is tied to the government funding now, which it wasn't in the past. But so if we don't have a budget, then we also don't have flood insurance. It seems appropriate to talk about it since I drove through what seemed like a flood in a lift.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think insurance in general has been a huge problem, right? Like all over the news, there's been conversations about insurance providers pulling out of these high risk states. And it was something that wasn't really a big thing in the last few years. Climate change and risk and wildfire, you know, insurance period has been very difficult to come by. And so I guess I'm a little bit jaded because this back, I think it was 2010, 2011, it was like every 3 months they were talking about not getting funding for this. And I think it defaulted. And every time it's defaulted, it was in that time frame. So it always feels a little bit like the boy who cried wolf, like this really isn't going to happen. The other thing that we have working for us is private flood insurance we can get, whereas before, you know, FHA wouldn't allow private flood insurance. Now we have more options. Some of those are write your own. So like they do it for NFIP, and I assume that those would be affected as well. But there are private companies that are issuing flood insurance. So I'm hoping they figure it out, but it feels like we go through this a lot. So as of this point, I'm not all that worried yet. Maybe September 29th, if there's not a resolution, I'll be more worried.
Yeah. We got another 40 days. Another 40 days. Well, and it's tied to government funding. So, you know, if we don't have flood insurance, we probably don't have a lot of other things as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It may not be the worst of our worries at that point in time. Yeah. I was talking at breakfast this morning with a gal that I had just met, and we were talking about different things that we had heard in the news this week, kind of ironically. And one of the things I saw in the news this last week that I don't know, maybe I'm thinking about this wrong, so set me straight if I am, but the headline was that it's a win. And I thought, and then I read things and it's like, really, have we gotten to the point where this is a win? So it was announced that mortgage banks lost only $534 per loan this last quarter compared to the $1,972 lost earlier in the year. And so I'm reading this and the headline is like, we finally got a win. This is like not a win, people. I mean, it's like, I'm just having a hard time feeling that this is a win. So Katie, you know, share with me if you would feel the same way reading that.
I mean, I think it's a win for sure. It's trending. It's trending in the right direction. And there's been so many difficult things going on that the fact that it's coming down and, you know, things are becoming a little bit more affordable and maybe we might start making money again. It's a win, but I totally agree with you. Like that's how bad things have become, that losing $500 is a win.
That's what we're celebrating. Yeah. It was the win of the week, I think is what they called it. And I'm like, I'm not sure that should be the win of the week, but your perspective is probably better than mine, having seen the trend of it versus what it actually still is. We're hearing a lot of things, you know, speaking of that $534, we're hearing a lot of things like within the network of things are, people have seen things kind of get better. But at the same time, people are at a point where, you know, they've trimmed literally over the last year, year and a half, like almost everything that they can, with the exception of human capital or things that, you know, benefits of people and those types of things. I'm just wondering if from your peers that you have in the industry, if you're kind of hearing something in a similar vein.
Yeah. And I know that there is still companies who are going through their sixth and seventh round of layoffs. So they're still trimming people and trying to get rid of some of those. Our people, you know, we're pretty light. We always run pretty light and they want to be busy and they want more business. So the people that are left, you know, really are hungry for more business. And I don't even think that we could trim because eventually, hopefully it will be coming back. And some of these tools that we've been sold or the vendors that are out there with the automation, they're things that you can put into place and then they can supplement people. But to some extent, you have to have people behind even some of these automations. They have to be managed by people. Somebody has to double check the work. You know, you need to have a human element in some way, shape or form. So I don't really think that there's, judging from like seventh round of layoffs, I don't think people want to cut any more human out of it.
Yeah.
And then through talent, you have to have those kind of benefits. Like people are looking for those kinds of benefits. So you can only trim so far before you have to just kind of bunker down and
wait it out.
Find good news and only losing $534 instead of $1,100. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. I think we'll have some conversation when we're in Nashville around like where people are at and where they're finding savings and those sorts of things. So hopefully we can help kind of bridge the gap of that $534 by finding some additional things together.
I'm sure if anybody can do it, it will be your guys's what, saving $100,000 circle or whatever. Yeah.
The $100,000 hour coming back with Mike Metz. Yep. Yeah, exactly. We are doing that at conference again this year. In the news also still this week, which doesn't impact you as much, but on the banking side, the Basel III situation where, and I heard some people talking about it here as well, the implications to the market of those proposed changes of, you know, having higher minimum capital requirements. I think it will be interesting to see. Just thought I would mention that in case somebody wasn't viewing last week, check it out. And there's some really good articles about there. As a matter of fact, I think Rob Christman posted something about a week and a half ago on the other impacts that can happen to the industry if the larger banks get hit with about 15 to 20% more capital requirements, because it impacts others, as most of those changes when they make them, it impacts other people down the line, including some of the peers that are in the mortgage space.
And we rely on those big banks for things. So yeah, depending on how they have to change their workflows, it could inadvertently, you know, affect IMBs or lenders. And our warehouse lines are mostly through larger banks. And so if they have capital requirements they have to meet, they're less likely to, you know, give us lines when we need them. And yeah, it totally changes lending requirements and credit risk and all kinds of things, depending on how they do this. Yeah. Even if we're not a big bank, we kind of have to watch and see how it's going to affect the industry as a whole. And then how we work within that, you know, ecosystem of the mortgage banking industry. So
It's one of those great things about having been involved a little bit with the agencies and stuff and learning about some of that stuff, that I think now there's a better feel out there for it. Just because you think you're only making a change to the small smaller group of individuals that maybe can afford, you know, the increased capital requirements, that doesn't mean that it doesn't change anything else. This is like one big ecosystem that all whirls around each other. One of the things that they said that they thought would change was warehouse lending.
Yeah.
And how that's approached. So that obviously does have a direct impact on all of the IMBs that are in the industry. So So we'll see what happens with that. I know, others in the industry, the MBA has not been supportive of this initiative. So we'll see what happens with that one. CFPB in the news several times this week. And for those of you who haven't seen the news yet, Director Chopra is going to be with us at our conference in Nashville. And having heard him speak when we were in DC in June, I am like the most excited person about that because I was expecting a certain personality and we got something that was so warm and he's a great speaker. So if you aren't registered and you're on the border, on the cusp of coming and seeing us in Nashville, you should come just for this. So he'll be joining us in Nashville. But one of the things that happened this week is they've begun auditing, and it's been in the news, how LOs are paid. LO comp is always, it seems like, an issue, no matter whether there's a lot of business or a little business. It's one of those things that just always seems to be kind of in the forefront. And just would love, I mean, the situation was house loans that are generated from internal sources differing from what was paid out on broker loans. No fines assessed in that situation, but audit findings. And so I would just love to hear, like, I know different places have different ways that they work with their LOs on compensation. Would kind of love to hear your take on that one and, you know, yeah, how you've navigated those waters.
Yeah. And it's hard to get super into LO comp because it's one of those things that you're not really supposed to talk about, but,
you don't have to give us details.
Some of the rules are, they're written to prevent, you know, the loan officer from getting an excessive compensation, but it's interesting because they write the rule and then it sometimes has the reverse effect, right? So if somebody wants to get skinny on a loan, you can't take a reduced comp, but that's actually more beneficial to the borrower because the borrower ends up, you know, winning
exactly
in the situation by a lower rate, or it makes a much more competitive market. And so they have these rules in place to prevent, you know, getting 3 points or price gouging. But then these kinds of markets, being able to get creative with LO comp really in the long run would benefit the borrower. And so there's two problems. That's one of the problems. The other problem is, I'm glad to hear that they're starting to audit this, because this is one of these where us in the compliance world will chat and everybody says this lender allows this, or this broker allows this. And so, brokers will sometimes allow variable comp, or they will do things that then we can't do if we're audited. So it creates an uneven playing field, which is exactly the opposite of the point of putting the rule into place, because it was supposed to create an even playing field. And now some people are violating it and just hoping that they don't get in trouble. And then the LO comp is also written in a way that it allows certain ways, like lead channels, where if something comes in through a lead, you can take a reduced comp. And so that can help the consumer. And if, you know, people are finding creative ways to implement or to still comply with the LO comp rule. And some of those are gray, you know, it depends on a company's appetite for risk. And so this is one of these things where, like, as always with the CFPB, more guidance would be more helpful, because people kind of have, everybody has a different risk appetite. And some of those it's creating an unfair playing field for people who are more conservative versus who are more aggressive. So yeah, it's nice to see that they're auditing it, that we might get some guidance on, like, what they're okay with and what they're not okay with. Mm-hmm. And even if they would relook at the rule and some of the things that they don't understand, how it negatively affects the consumer, or how it negatively affects the industry, and maybe we can get some sorts of revisions. I mean, I think that would be great. Yeah. Since it came out, has always been
a huge thing. It's always a topic.
Yes, yes.
It's always a topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one good thing that I thought that could come into play, you know, from the competitive environment is it always, like, from a company's standpoint, if somebody else is able to do something that they see another on the street doing, of course, in the LO world, it just causes a lot of unnecessary chaos because they're upset that, hey, this other company can do that. And why can't we? Is that I thought it may, like, even some of those situations out or make those stop happening. In addition to, like, LO Comp in kind of the CFPB world this week, Freedom, I'm sure everybody saw this, was fined $1.75 million for forbidden actions with 40 real estate brokerages. And it's like, again, not out on the street anymore. So don't see it. I just guess I thought that all of that was like big old past history. And none of that was, call me naive, none of that was happening anymore.
I actually think it might have been getting worse now because everyone's trying to get business and the realtors are the ones that have the business now because there's no refis. So it's probably gotten a lot worse. And it's interesting to see the enforcement action because it's the first enforcement action that's come out in a while, even though, you know, they've been saying we're going to enforcement. This is the first actual thing we've seen come out. I'm wondering personally, $1.75 million, but I read they had over 1,000 leads provided to them. I mean, maybe Freedom's the one laughing because that doesn't seem like a lot of money depending on what they made on that.
Well, it depends on if they're making that negative $534.
Yeah, exactly. Great point. If they're losing money, it was a bad deal. But I have a feeling some of these came in when the margins were much better because it was from 17 to now. So MSAs are always risky. You've got to go through the audit process. You have to make sure that what your MSA says you're getting, you are actually getting. That was one of the main things that came out, which we've seen them too. They want to pay $10,000 a month to a realtor to get basically nothing that's in the agreement. You've got to be looking at those and having a third party review them. The subscriptions are hard because a lot of these tools that are coming out are made to provide free stuff to realtors because they know, you know, these companies know realtors like that. So that was another thing they got hit for, which is hard. And then my favorite was just like the parties. I want to be invited to those parties because apparently they got free tickets, free booze, free food. It's not another area that's surprising. It is nice to see that the realtor was also fined just because sometimes, you know, the realtor expects these things. If it's another one of those even playing fields, like if everybody else is doing it, it's hard to say that you can't do these things because it does give you a competitive advantage. And, you know, retail loan officers working with realtors is gone on forever. And they do have these different kind of relationships. And so it's nice that the CFPB is looking at both sides of it and not just finding the lender.
Yeah. And Stephen A., thanks for setting us straight. It was actually $2 million. Oh, okay. With also the brokerage was hit with a $200,000 penalty, which I think is, I would agree with you on that. I think that's a good thing because then it kind of gives you something when people come to you that you can kind of point to as far as if you have agents that are asking you to do certain things. It's like, look, you don't want to end up in this situation.
Yeah.
You know, and this does actually happen. But yeah, I just thought that it was funny that we haven't had one for such a long time that made the news like that. So it we'll see if it continues to kind of like trend that way, as sometimes does.
HUD repealed the dual compensation rule. And so now we have a lot more people trying to, you know, compensate realtors or realtors want to work in the LO space. And so people need to be aware that like, dual compensation and RESPA are two different regulations. And so just because you're not violating dual compensation doesn't mean that you're not going to violate RESPA. So people need to be really careful because some people assume since dual compensation is gone, it's a free-for-all. And that is not the case. It is certainly not the case. And so that is, it would be top of mind and, you know, something that people should be well aware of. So,
yeah. So for those of you that didn't know, Katie may be the SVP of operations at People's Mortgage, but she wears many hats there. So she's put on her compliance hat.
Oh yeah. I did compliance for, I think, 3 years, and it was soul crushing. That's for everyone who's still in compliance. It's a very hard area.
On to the little bit lighter side of things. Stephen A., thanks for putting comments in the chat. I would agree with you too. I do think it's the start of something. I don't think it's like a one-time shot at things. I think we will continue to see more. So words of wisdom from Stephen A. in the chat about being careful. Kind of on the lighter side of things, number one, I always like to pick up a new phrase every week. This is not, it's something that I sent to you, Katie, because I just heard it yesterday, but I thought I would share to see if anybody else on the call knew what it was. I heard the phrase yesterday from Mr. Kevin Ferranio, by the way. He was golfing yesterday. And have you ever heard of birdie juice? Mm-mm. So birdie juice, apparently, for those of you golfers out there, has anybody ever heard of birdie juice? So they were playing as a team and beer or another beverage when you hit a birdie. There was some fireball involved. I had never heard of birdie juice. I'm not sure. I think it's the world's greatest idea if you're playing with people who are really good. If you're playing with people like me, you could get by because you would have one shot and you'd probably be good. But yeah.
So if you get a birdie, everyone else has to take a shot?
Everyone on the team takes a shot.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what they were playing yesterday. So so that was my term of the week that I learned. Maybe not the best mortgage one, but it definitely does apply to some people. I just thought it was kind of cute. But people are continuing to think creatively about housing. So I thought we would spend just a few minutes at the end here kind of talking about some of the things that are happening. You're in a like high demand market. You've not had inventory in Phoenix for how long now, Katie?
Probably 4 years, 5 years. It's been a while, even before before COVID and all the craziness. We've been struggling for inventory.
Yeah. So I always think it's interesting to look and see what people are doing. And there definitely are some creative ideas. I don't think they're all things that, you know, people will be able to launch or take advantage of. But I always love to kind of look at those and see what people are doing. So office buildings, we've talked about it before. Apparently, the National Bureau of Economic Research went back and looked at housing shortage versus office vacancy issues and determined that 10 to 15% of office buildings are suitable for apartment conversion. Now, that's not a high percentage by any means, and it is, you know, apartments. So maybe doesn't apply to a mortgage. But they spun it a slightly different way than I had ever seen before, in that most of those spaces are in downtown areas that many have been diminished after COVID. So they spun it in a way that bring a break to the developers that they've recommended. Actually, a lobbyist for the Commercial Real Estate Development Association has recommended a 20% tax credit for developers for conversion costs, because they claim that cities would be able to create more tax revenue by bringing more people into the downtown areas and also reduce carbon emissions because of people not commuting in the same way they normally would. So I would love to hear, in your market, have you seen anything similar like that happening that would assist in housing, or is that something that the Phoenix market just is not tapped into?
No, we're not like San Francisco or anything, where our downtown has never been like a very vibrant downtown, particularly for how big Phoenix is. So there isn't a lot of outstanding commercial space that could be turned into. We have had a lot of multifamily developments built where previous things were, they're tearing something down and they're building up, you know, these crazy multifamily units. And the problem with that then becomes infrastructure. So like, even with these downtown buildings that you're converting, first of all, who's paying for it and who's, because at some point it becomes a public, you know, policy you have to give.
It does.
Whatever. You have to have the infrastructure for people to live there, because if people are going down there, you have to have restaurants and other types of infrastructure.
Grocery stores.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of those areas, everyone is left, right? Like there's nothing down there. So if you just build houses, is that enough, I guess, would be my question. Like, would people even go down there to live? And to your point, only a certain amount are suitable for conversions. So what does that look like? And is it even going to help affordable housing? I mean, like the multifamilies they're building by us they're all like luxury, you know, luxury apartments. So, well, that doesn't help the affordability crisis. So yeah. I think it's a good idea as long as it's well thought out and they do things to ensure that what's going in there would be affordable and would make sense and, you know, helps the public as a whole, not just necessarily these commercial real estate developers that are hemorrhaging money.
I agree. It's kind of one of those things that, just like we were talking about in the mortgage industry, you know, you can do something and if you think, you know, focus on one particular group and it helps that group, but then there are unintended consequences that happen after that. I would have to say in the Minneapolis market, everything that appears to be going up to is pretty much on that luxury end with a lot of amenities and I would say people in their late 20s, probably kind of early, mid, late 20s, tend to flock to those. The hope is always that it opens up housing somewhere else, that somebody can be supportive, but I haven't seen that yet.
Those kids are coming from their mom's basement, though. So
so they don't count.
Yeah.
good for the moms, though, yeah. Right? Well, I appreciate you doing this. It always goes by so quickly. I always say that, but appreciate you doing this with me today. As always, it's good to see you. Happy for you to share your expertise with all those hats that you wear, and can't wait to see you in Nashville.
Yeah, looking forward to Nashville. It'll be fun.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, everybody. We appreciate you joining. We'll be back here next week at the same time. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.